Hi, and welcome to this episode of the Cure Talks Cancer Podcast. Each week, we'll be hearing from patients, survivors, caregivers, advocates, and healthcare professionals to do what Cure does best, provide cancer updates, research, and education. In this special edition, Cure spoke with Rose Gerber, Director of Patient Advocacy and Education at the Community Oncology Alliance and a breast cancer survivor, about disparities in cancer care and what we can do to address them moving forward.
So to start, can you discuss the disparities that we see in cancer care?
You know, kind of what I want to, you know, when I was thinking about this question, it's interesting to me now, and it's a good thing that this issue is so top of mind for everybody. But Christy, as you know, it's not a new topic. You know, these disparities have been around forever, and we really haven't seen a lot of change. Like going back to my early days of advocacy, and I'm now a long-term survivor, I'm a 16-year survivor. When I was doing local breast cancer specific work, we were reaching out to underserved populations in Connecticut. And now nobody thinks of Connecticut, you know, as a state with a lot of ethnic minorities. And it really isn't. It's primarily a Caucasian affluent state. But when I was doing work with the public health department, we were reaching a lot of employees that work for Mohegan Sun and Foxwoods. And they employ a very broad, you know, diversity of employees. And at that time, we were already aware of the disparities with the Black and African-American screening rates. And nothing's changed since then. I mean, very, very little has changed. And the reasons are still the same. There are socioeconomic issues. There's access to healthcare issues. There's distrust of the healthcare providers. So I'm excited to talk about this today in the sense that I think it's good to keep this topic around, but it's been around for so long.
Absolutely. And so in particular, are there disparities that maybe we see more often in breast cancer or even metastatic breast cancer? So for example, like we've seen declines in breast cancer deaths, but we still see these gaps in mortality, in particular, like if you were to compare between white and Black women, for example.
Yeah, and definitely there's those disparities are still there. And, you know, American Cancer Society, Association for American Cancer Research, ASCO, They all have information on this, and the numbers are around 40% worse outcomes for African American women when they use the same sample size compared to white women. And again, why is that? It can be attributed to low screening rates, later diagnoses, and also, Christy, what we're seeing now is there is a lot more research around the biology. So because I'm a breast cancer survivor, I still do follow breast cancer news. And what I've learned over the years is that African-American women in particular, they're diagnosed younger. They're diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, which is a rare subtype. I was HER2 positive. So when you're diagnosed with breast cancer, it's already scary. When you're diagnosed young, it's already scary. But then when you have a subtype, like many of the African-American women do, with triple negative, which often has poor outcomes, that's where you're going to see a lot of the disparities in overall survival as well.
Absolutely. And so what are some of the reasons we see these disparities? Like we've had so many advances in treatment, but we're not seeing equal survival when it comes to all patients. So is the reason, like I think you had mentioned, you know, kind of maybe economic issues that are happening?
Yeah, definitely economics. And it's interesting, having worked in the advocacy world now for over a decade, there are so many issues that actually will impact patient care. So for example, we talk about screening. Okay, well, are the screening rates lower among African-American women and Hispanics? Yes. But then you peel back the layer. Well, why is that? And a lot of times it's basics like access to transportation, not being able to get time off work, being concerned about the out-of-pocket cost. So there's layers of reasons for these disparities. And again, it is unfortunately nothing new. But I think, again, due to what happened in politically, socially in 2020, I do feel very optimistic that we're going to see some really incredible breakthroughs in the years ahead. Because, again, there's accountability now. Every organization, every oncology, every organization, I shouldn't say every, the majority of oncology organizations, advocacy organizations, even on the congressional front, have issued statements on what that organization is going to do about disparities. But guess what, Christy? Companies have done that before, but now they're going to have to be held accountable. Putting out a position statement is not going to be enough. So there's a lot of eyes on all these organizations, including on COA. For the first time ever, COA issued a position statement on disparities. And a lot of that had to do with the fact that our new COA president is Dr. Kashyap Patel, who's very well known in the national oncology space. He's a firstborn American, he's a first generation Indian. And this is one of his really high priority items. And again, when you have the leadership of an organization saying, we need to talk about this and peel back the layers and not just talk about it, do something about it, you're gonna see change. Because again, it's not just making a statement, it's being accountable. And all eyes are on COA, all eyes are on ASCO, all eyes are on the American Association of Cancer Research. And of course, a lot of the these eyes are coming from the affected populations, like the African-American breast cancer groups are doing a great job of drawing attention to this and keeping people accountable.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And so it sounds like we're starting to do something to address these challenges. For breast or metastatic breast cancer, how can we maybe raise more awareness about these disparities so that we can, you know, try to negate the challenges we're seeing?
Mm-hmm. I think what's really important is anytime there's any kind of a cancer conference, and I really mean this, you need to have the right people participating. The right people need to have the platform. There's organizations, national organizations, some are very well known, like the Tiger Lily Foundation, Sisters. There's also several state-based organizations. So I mentioned I live in Connecticut. There's another organization called Sisters Journey. And they're not not to be confused with the National Sisters Group. The Sisters organization in Sisters Journey in Connecticut, they've been around for over 25 years. And you have to have those type of leaders that are respected within their own communities at the table, bringing up the discussions, and not just having the leadership, having the actual cancer survivors, family members, caregivers, give them the microphone, give them the opportunity to tell their stories. Don't let someone tell their story for them.
So with that, how can we help to advocate for greater equality in cancer care?
When you say we, are you talking about, you know, society? Are you talking about your publication? Are you talking about, because I think there's some universal answers and then some very specific.
Yeah, I think it's a combination. I think as a society as a whole, and then in the cancer community, what can we kind of be doing to help hopefully advocate?
You know what I have found to be very, very successful is, you know, having worked with advocates and cancer survivors from all stages of diagnosis, from patients that are literally in the chemo chair to long-term survivors like myself, is when they realize that they can help influence change and participating in events, they really like to go to educational events. And I, again, COVID has changed everything. I know that we cannot do live events anymore. And the reality is virtual events are great in many ways, but they also have their limitations now due to Zoom burnout, which we know is a very real thing. But I think when you bring them in early, like not just doing an event, let them help plan the agenda, ask them what they want to talk about, let them know that their voice matters, give them space in your publication, give them space on your podcast. Let them know that they're part of the conversation from the beginning. I just think keep creating opportunities and again, like, so let's say we talked about structural barriers, and one of them is the basics, like, you know, transportation, getting time off of work, you know, get five or six people together, you know, for a focus group and hear, you know, hear directly from them. Like how, you know, we've heard that, you know, sometimes some of these disparity issues are because there's lack of transportation. Is that true? What can we do to change that? Can we provide gas cards to help you get to your appointments? Do you need, you know, $25, you know, to pay for parking? Clinical trials, you know, bringing a lot more information on clinical trials. I'm a huge, huge advocate for clinical trials. I've been on three trials myself. And now when I look at it in hindsight, I was very fortunate. Again, I was, you know, money was no issue. Getting to where I needed to be was no issue. But now that I look back at it, it's particularly in one trial, there was parking, you know, there was gas, you know, I never thought about those things, but those are very real concerns that prevent people from participating. And, you know, Christy, this got me to thinking about something else is in the past, and it's been in the literature, in the medical literature and the academic literature for years, is if a patient didn't show up, it was non-compliant, or if a patient dropped out of clinical trial, non-compliant. And that's like blaming the patient. But what we've learned now is the patient wasn't non-compliant. They just had barriers. They had structural barriers where they could not get to their appointment. There wasn't anybody to take care of their children to go, you know, participate in a clinical trial for 52 weeks. There's so many levels of how we can help out.
Absolutely. And so does COA Patient Advocacy Network have any resources that we can maybe let patients or their loved ones know about and would, you know, hopefully to try to negate some of these challenges we've heard about?
Yes. Yeah, so as I mentioned, this is the first year that COA has done anything related, specifically to making a statement on disparities. So one of the things that COA has done is we have put together a health disparities and equity task force, which is brand new. In fact, we're having our first meeting next week. I'm one of the members. We have 9 states representative and 16 cancer centers. And what I would like, you know, any listeners to do is, you know, to kind of keep an eye on what we're doing. The resources that we have available will unfold slowly, because obviously this is a very, very deep issue. But what we, so in terms of like health disparity specific information, that is not immediately available, but I do want to refer your listeners to some other resources that are directly tied into what we're talking about. So with COVID, one of the big issues that our community oncologists started to draw attention to, which makes a lot of sense, is with COVID, you know, there was the stay-at-home shelter-in-place national directives, which we all lived through. But what happened is, and it makes sense, is screening really, really declined. So two of our COA physicians, when I say COA physician, they're, you know, Dr. Deborah Pat is out of Texas Oncology and Dr. Lucia Gordon, a Florida cancer specialist. They tracked data on the lack of screenings and what that means for long-term outlooks for patients. And very sadly, again, this is going to impact these minority communities in particular are going to be hit very hard. So we're going to see a lot of, sadly, later diagnosis, which is going to have poor outcomes. So we're really, so you're in terms of a resource, I really encourage, you know, any listeners or readers to visit our website and look for that study on the screening outcomes. And also something that is very fundamental about some of these issues that we see in health disparities is access to care. So when you think about what COA does, one of our most fundamental issues is we advocate for access to quality care. And access to quality care doesn't just mean medication, it actually means a physical location. So having a community cancer center in your area, somewhere you can access, it has affordable care. And we have a practice impact report that again is on our website. It's very layperson friendly, but you can take a look at that, you know, how cancer centers, when these cancer centers close, that also impacts the minority population, because now you don't have access to care, or there is a cancer center, but it's much further away. And if a cancer center is much further away, then how are you going to get there? What if you don't have a car? What if there's no public transportation? And interesting, when we talk about disparities right now, I know that we're focusing a lot on the minority communities, but on COA's website, where we do have our statement on disparities, we also talk about, I believe off the top of my head, that it's Kentucky, where there's high rates of lung cancer. So it's also, disparities also appear in the Caucasian population as well. But yeah, access to care is a really, really big issue. And people always think access to care is just, you know, they're thinking about their medication. Like, do I have access to a clinical trial? Do I have access to an oral drug? But access to care can literally mean access to a physical location to access care.
And as a breast cancer survivor, what would you say is your biggest piece of advice for others facing a diagnosis, especially those who might be dealing with some of these disparities and the challenges that we talked about earlier?
Number one, exhale. I always like to start with exhale, because when I reflect back on my own time, it's so overwhelming, Christy. It really is. Like, now I can talk about it with more ease, but I also, even to this day, 16 years later, have moments where I might be telling a story that I've told before, but a new memory will be triggered and I will just you know, clench up and, you know, the tears will just start falling. So I say, you know, exhale. And number one, get your information from trusted resources. So a lot has changed from the time I was diagnosed, you know, over a decade plus ago. And some of it is good and some of it is bad. There's an extraordinary amount of information on cancer and on all breast cancer types. And then there's subgroups. So today we're talking a lot about, you know, breast cancer in African Americans. So there's websites directly related to information for African Americans or Hispanic Americans, or the Young Survival Coalition does great work. So that's the good news. There's a lot of information. The bad news is there's also a lot of bad information out there, because right now anybody can call themselves an advocate. So everybody has a platform. Everybody has a microphone. Everybody has an iPhone camera, or, you know, a lot of people do. I shouldn't say everybody. So my recommendation and advice to people who are newly diagnosed is be very, very careful when you're getting your information, because it's either going to calm you down and soothe you, or it's going to overwhelm you and just break you down. Then once you digest that information, look to the national organizations, because those are, I recommend looking to the national organizations first. So the well-known, you know, Susan G. Komen, and then look to your local organizations, because there's a lot happening at the state level. And what the cancer survivors will find, the differences between the national organizations and the state organizations, is a lot of the state-based and local organizations, they have a lot of peer support. So I gave you the example of Sisters Journey in Connecticut, a 25-year-old organization dedicated to serving breast cancer patients, African-American breast cancer patients. Well, prior to COVID, they did everything they did. They had monthly support groups, and that emotional support is so, so very important. So my recommendation, be careful of your sources, because there's a lot of bad information out there. Look to the well-established national organizations, because their information is current. And then also seek out your local resources as well. Oh, and one other tidbit too, and a lot of people forget about this, and I was recently reminded of it just thinking of my own story, is a resource that people often forget about is oncology social workers. And not every cancer center will have an on-site oncology social worker, but many of the national organizations like Cancer Care, Cancer Support Community, can guide you to the right sources to get an online appointment with social workers. And that's very helpful, because I know a lot of times you don't want to talk to your family members, because you don't want to, and that was my situation. My husband was very, very supportive, but I was very, very private at the time of my own diagnosis. And I didn't really want to tell my husband how sad I really felt. And my doctor said, you know, I think you need to talk to an oncology social worker. And it was really so helpful to me in my own journey. And I know that that's, a resource that many people don't realize exists.
Absolutely. And is there anything else we didn't touch upon that you think our audience should know more about?
Yeah, I do, because advocacy is so important to me. I want to say that I recognize when you're a newly diagnosed patient or you're actively in treatment, your top and main concern should be your health, your physical health and your emotional well-being. But once you are ready to advocate, you have your own role that you need to activate within yourself. So, and I've come from both perspectives, you know, being an advocate, getting involved with advocacy groups to my position now, where I started a national advocacy group, and I'm providing resources and support and mentoring to other young advocates. But it takes two people. So in other words, I just mentioned a lot of resources that are available to anyone who wants to learn more about healthcare disparities, whether they want to know about insurance issues. The information is out there. But now the advocate or the cancer, they have to put the time in to read about it, learn about it, ask questions. Advocacy is active. So my suggestion is recognize the responsibility that you have, just if you, as a patient or as an advocate, that there's organizations like COA's Patient Advocacy Network and all the other really well-known groups like ACS CAN that provide resources. But we can provide you resources, but it's up to you now to educate yourself and take advantage of those resources.
CURE is now accepting nominations for our inaugural Metastatic Breast Cancer Heroes Awards. For our inaugural celebration, we are proud to present two separate awards honoring heroes who have made a significant impact in the lives of those affected by metastatic breast cancer. For more information or to nominate your hero today, visit www.curetoday.com/award-events. Don't forget to subscribe to the Cure Talks Cancer podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or other apps to hear every episode, or visit curetoday.com/podcasts. The Cure Talks Cancer podcast is the official podcast of Cure Magazine, the indispensable guide to every stage of the cancer experience. For more information, visit us at curetoday.com and find us on Twitter at @cure_magazine or Facebook at @curemagazine.